The commander killed an Israeli attack on the country's embassy building in Syria. Iran's top military commander says the Israeli regime has failed to achieve any of its goals in Gaza, warning that Palestinian resistance will continue until the regime's total annihilation. And Islamic resistance in Iraq carries out yet another operation against Israeli oil refineries in the occupied port city of Haifa in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Chief of Staff of Iran's Armed Forces says U.S. and other arrogant powers should note that days are numbered until the complete annihilation of the Zionist entity. Major General Mohammad Bagheri said Israel, after its illegal creation, usurped Al-Quds housing, Al-Aqsa Mosque, the third holiest site in Islam. He also hailed Operation Al-Aqsa Flood by Palestinians back in October, saying that it reveals just a part of the strength of the resistance front. He said the surprise move by Palestinian resistance inflicted irreparable defeat on the enemy. The top general also noted Israel failed to achieve any of its goals after 6 months of genocidal campaign in Gaza, adding that resistance is alive and will continue until the complete destruction of the occupying regime. He was speaking at the funeral ceremony of Major General Mohammad Reza Zahedi in Isfahan. Now, Major General Zahedi was among seven military advisors martyred in an Israeli airstrike on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria on Monday. And joining us now from the Iranian capital, Hassan Mati Torabi, director at the Resalah Strategic Studies Institute, joining us from Tehran, as I just mentioned. Hello, Mr. Torabi. Pleasure to check in with you. I don't know if you remember, Sam, last time we spoke, it was in the right here at the network. Hope you're safe, doing well. Haven't seen you in a while, but your thoughts on this wild and highly illegal targeting of Iran's diplomatic mission, and the fact that a lot of top brass have come out and said that Israelis are basically on the decline, in a state of panic and defeat, and it's just a matter of time until the complete destruction of the Zionist entity.
Good afternoon, Daniel. Yeah, I mean, basically, we see that after October 7th, everything that the Zionists had been working for decades prior to that has basically been destroyed in terms of their global standing that they had built up, in terms of even allies that they had for decades prior criticizing them and not being able to support them. And of course, most importantly, you have the Palestinians and the resistance putting them under pressure, and we are now seeing the Zionist entity basically just under so much pressure that it's not able to be able to withstand this for much longer. This is why you see them, as was mentioned, they've not achieved any of their military goals that they announced 6 months ago very arrogantly, that they will do this and they will do that. So they've achieved none of that. And this is why you see that they're attacking children in hospitals. This is why they're attacking ambulances in southern Lebanon, UN staff, killing soft targets and non-military targets, and of course the latest attacking a diplomatic mission, which is completely against international law, and doing it very openly, which people say, well, the Americans did that with the Chinese embassy in Yugoslavia during the war there, but the Americans always maintained that they were doing that it was a mistake and it was not purpose, and whether it was or wasn't a mistake, but they maintained that it was a mistake. So this is the first time in history that you have somebody attacking a diplomatic mission and announcing it very openly. Obviously, they want Iran to overreact so that this will then give them an excuse to drag the Americans into the war. And very interestingly, you see the Americans and the Iranians are communicating without the Israelis in the middle here. Basically, the Iranians telling the Americans that they should not be dragged into Netanyahu's trap, and the Americans, basically saying, okay, just don't attack any of our assets. So I think the Americans have accepted that Iran will retaliate in a very painful way to the Israelis. But I don't think the Americans really want to expand this war and have a larger regional war. But the Israelis are desperate, and they feel incorrectly, and their calculation is incorrect, that if there's a larger war, with whatever excuse, that they could be saved from the end of this colonial, racist colonial settler project called Israel. And so this is why they're doing all these things.
Right. See, I mean, you notice people in the West are no longer really ostracized after this campaign of genocide by the Israelis. They're no longer really ostracized for calling the Zionist regime barbaric, racist, and genocidal. Up until a short while ago, you very well know you would be labeled an anti-Semite in the West if you spoke out against Zionism. And now it's open season for a lot of people. Are saying this campaign in the last 6 months has to people that the Zionist regime was able to target, able to isolate, put them through repercussions if they said things against them as anti-Jew, anti-Semite. They can no longer get away with that, and that has to be considered a big win for people, the global opposition against the Zionist entity.
Absolutely, and again, how do you explain, you know, somebody who's a genocidal maniac? I mean, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that they miscalculated or that they do things that are not rational or even, you know, common sense to other people in the world, which is the majority of people. This is a good sign. You know, people are always very negative about the future and humanity, but I think this was actually a good sign where we saw a lot of, you know, I would say the majority of humanity, regardless of background, basically having the normal human reaction to witnessing these horrific genocidal actions that are committed by this by the settler state, by this colonial project. This is the deal. I mean, they always thought that if they have American elites on their side, then everything will be okay, and it doesn't matter what anybody else in the world thinks. This is not the case anymore. The world has changed, and it's not the world of 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And people in other places of the world, not only governments, but actually people matter. And, of course, the most important, like I said, is that the resistance, led by the Palestinian resistance itself, has showed that all the propaganda that they were trying to brainwash people with, particularly in the West, was all, you know, empty and lies, that they are very vulnerable, that they don't have any strategic depth, and they will leave if they're not able to, you know, ethnically cleanse and genocide the native population of that region of the world, which is the most important geostrategic region in the world. So their goal has always been to take that region away from the Muslims and from the Arabs and have it be part of the Western world, the area that connects Asia, Europe, and Africa. And they tried that for 75 years, but it's not going to work. The people are not going anywhere. The Palestinians are there. It's their land. And only the colonial settlers are the ones that are going to have to leave.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Always a pleasure to check in with you. Talk to you soon. Hopefully, see you in the corridors here at the network sometime soon. Joining us from the Iranian capital, Sam Matthew Torabi, director at Risalat Strategic Studies Institute. Meanwhile, Palestinians in Gaza are witnessing an endless spiral of death and devastation with Israeli genocide in the besieged territory now in its seventh month. According to the Gaza Health Ministry, Israeli attacks have killed 54 Palestinians and injured scores more in the past 24 hours. In the latest attacks, the Israeli army carried out heavy artillery shelling of the Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. Israeli fighter jets also completely destroyed a residential building in the Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza. And to the south, the city of Rafah was also under heavy artillery attack. To date, nearly 33,100 people, most of them women and children, have been killed in Gaza since the Israelis launched their onslaught back on October 7th, and nearly 76,000 others have been injured. The Palestine Red Crescent Society says over 1,000 children in Gaza have lost now one or both of their legs. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Musaba, joined us earlier from the central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah with more details.
Yes, actually, it was a tough night for the Palestinian civilians across all areas of Gaza Strip as the Israeli occupation forces continued their airstrikes and attacks against different parts of different areas of Gaza Strip. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, more Israeli airstrikes hit the northern part of the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly Al-Zahra neighborhood, which is located in the northern part of the central area, as you know. In the meantime, the Israeli shelling was maintained over the last night against different parts of the central area of Gaza Strip, particularly the eastern part of Al-Burej refugee camp and the northern part of Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. We are talking about intense Israeli artillery shelling that was maintained over the last night. In the meantime, when it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli warplanes continued their airstrikes against the western part of the city. In the meantime, the Israeli occupation forces on the ground continued blowing up more residential buildings in the western part of the city, particularly the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex. Generally, the people are still have their own fears, and they are completely worried that the Israeli occupation forces would carry out their ground offensive against Rafah City. And to the people, it is just a matter of time for conducting this operation, because, as you know, the Israeli occupation forces are still threatening to carry out that ground offensive, and they are still imposing their siege on Gaza Strip entirely, and they are still procrastinating in allowing more aid to enter into Gaza Strip. According to the trajectory of the Israeli attacks on the ground, the Israeli occupation forces have been intensifying their attacks against Rafah City, including the continuous and the relentless Israeli airstrikes, alongside the continuous chronic artillery shelling that has been hitting that area for roughly three consecutive weeks. So yes, the people are still worried about having this operation against the people there, knowing that we have at least 1.5 million Palestinian civilians are still amassed and crammed in that area with having their catastrophic humanitarian conditions. They are still suffering amid this continuous abyss imposed by the Israeli occupation forces against them.
Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it's carried out fresh strike on an Israeli target in occupied Palestinian territories. Iraqi Resistance said it launched an operation against oil refineries in the port city of Haifa using drones. The attack was in response to all the massacres committed by Israel against Gazans, including women, children, and the elderly. The group said it will continue these operations as long as the regime continues its bloodshed in Gaza. In recent months, Islamic Resistance, an umbrella group in Iraq, has conducted a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It's also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for Israel's campaign of genocide in Gaza. Tensions in southern Lebanon remain high as the Israeli regime and Hezbollah resistance movement target each other in areas close to the border. Hezbollah claims it's targeted a group of Israeli soldiers at a border post, and Israel also targets new areas, including a medical center in southern Lebanon.
Well, Hezbollah has released a statement saying that they targeted a group of soldiers near the post of Ramia, which is on the nearer to the coast. It is on more on the western side of the border. And this is just part, of course, of the many other operations that they conducted. This comes also after the Israelis targeted the area of Arnun, which is someplace that they have not targeted before, but we know that the house was evacuated. There was a house that was targeted in this town of Arnun, which is near the Arnun Fort. It is one of the most famous or touristic sites in South Lebanon. And there was also another attack yesterday, which was against an area in Marjayoun. The city of Marjayoun has not been targeted by the Israelis. And that area that was targeted specifically was a place, a center for ambulance workers and paramedics that belong to the Amal movement. So we had three of the Amal movement members martyred and killed in that attack alone. Of course, the Israelis continue with their overflights and so on. Hezbollah has launched several operations also in the last 20 hours or so. We have targeting of devices in the Suba farms and other posts as well.
Iran's security forces have arrested three members of the Daesh terrorist group near the capital, Tehran. Police spokesman General Saeed Muntazar al-Mahdi says a high-profile Daesh member, identified as Mohammad Zakir, alias Ramish, is among those captured in central province of Alborz. They were nabbed in two separate operations and were arrested after their car was shot at and forced to stop. The three terrorists were said to be planning to carry out bombing attacks on the occasion of Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of the holy month of Ramadan. According to police spokesperson, eight other people were also accompanying the terrorists were also detained. People across the world have taken to the streets to mark International Quds Day as Israel continues with its genocidal war in the besieged Gaza Strip.
The International Quds Day this year comes following Israel's airstrike on the consular section of Iran's embassy in Damascus that killed seven Iranian military officers. This latest Israeli attack, together with over 6 months of regime's genocide in Gaza, prompted thousands of Iranians to pour into the streets across the country to mark Quds Day.
Recently, there was an incident in which we were all heartbroken and devastated, as two of the top Iranian generals were killed and our country's embassy was air-targeted. This act was against international and human rights law. As an Iranian and a Jew, we condemn this issue.
Quds Day is commemorated all over the world on the last Friday of Ramadan. It is a day of international solidarity with the Palestinian people. Just like previous years, the Iranian Jew community also joined other protesters to express their support for Palestinians in Gaza. This community believes that the United Nations and the Western countries have been totally inactive over the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip. This year, the International Quds Day comes amid the ongoing Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Israel has cut off fuel, electricity, food and water to Palestinians living in the besieged territory.
Iranians once again resonated voices of solidarity with Palestinians on International Quds Day and also strongly condemned the recent criminal acts of the Israeli regime leading to the martyrdom of two senior Iranian military personnel. When it comes to violation of human rights, nobody can stay silent. Fateh Masumi, Tehran.
That's it for you, ladies. Everyone, thanks for tuning in and goodbye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن می کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance. Spring of Truth.
In the opinion of Imam Khomeini, the essence of power is an attribute of perfection, and God also possesses this attribute in its absolute sense. Imam said in this regard as following: power is a form of perfection in itself. Allah, the sublime and exalted, is powerful. As such, one should not shun power. Instead, he should understand it and benefit from it.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله dear audience welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. Well, in this program what we do is to listen to certain speeches and sentences of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, who was the great founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and then try to shed light on some of the points and details and lessons that we can take out of these sentences in order to make use of them in our daily lives. About Imam Ali alayhi salam and his character, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said, Imam Ali alayhi salam was a governor who governed a country which extended from Hejaz to Egypt to Iran and elsewhere, but was humbler than any of his subjects. This sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi concerns the humility of Imam Ali alayhi salam. From the Quranic character which is embodied in the personality of Commander of the Faithfuls, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam is the character of humility. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in his holy book, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم and walk not on the earth with conceit and arrogance. Verily, you can neither rend nor penetrate the earth, nor can you attain a stature like the mountains in the high. Surah Al-Isra, verse number 37.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صلي على
رسول الله
يا ربنا صلي على طه النبي وآله.
Well, this verse of Surah Al-Isra contains a clear call towards adoring good character with humility, tenderness, knowledge of self-worth, explicit prohibition of indulging the heart in frivolities like arrogance, pride, frolicking, disdain for the people, as well as recommending the opposite of humility and moderation after understanding the foregoing prohibitions. Imam Ali alayhi salam had contradictory qualities like greatness with humility, courage with precaution, bravery with remission, generosity with moderation, forgiveness with the ability, and intrepidity with wisdom. He would not say anything unless he himself had done it. He said, whatever I ask you to do, I do before you, and whatever I forbid you from, I leave it before forbidding you from it. This hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam is quite representative of what Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi said about the humility of this great character. Thank you very much, dear listeners. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today. Africa Today.
Libya is a North African country frequently in the news over its political stalemate. The country has two competing governments, the Tripoli-based High State Council and the House of Representatives in the eastern city of Tobruk. The reports of these two sides will unite for the good of the country. Libya is also at the center of a migrant crisis. The total number of migrants landed in Italy from Libya last year was approximately 51,700, of which 16,500 came from the eastern region of Libya. This country is also one of the richest countries in Africa in terms of oil reserves. Libya is now trying to ramp up its petroleum output and draw foreign investors back to its vast oil fields. Meanwhile, amid the U.S.-Israeli genocide on Gaza, Libya has voiced support for the measures taken by the International Court of Justice, ICJ, to prevent genocide in the Gaza Strip. Elsewhere, under the deposed dictator Muammar Gaddafi, controversial incidents took place in Libya, including the disappearance of Lebanese scholar Imam Moussa Sadr. Internationally, Libya enjoys cordial ties with many countries, including Iran. Officials say the cooperation between these two Muslim nations are on the right track and can develop in various fields.
An interview with the Libyan ambassador to Iran.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today. This week, we have a special guest to discuss issues relating to Libya. We are honored to have with us here in the studio His Excellency Ali Juma Al-Obeidi, the ambassador of Libya to Iran. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for your time.
Thank you. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
In the name of God, I have to thank Press TV for this opportunity that has been provided for me to explain the Libyan stance regarding regional and international issues.
Let's start off with the Iran-Libya relations. What is the current status of ties between these two friendly countries?
Diplomatic relations between the two sides have developed immensely. They have reached levels that can only be described as outstanding, which is caused by various factors. The most prominent being the desire of the two countries to strengthen these alliances because developing positive relations between countries of the Islamic world makes them stronger and more resilient. During my time in Tehran, I worked on decreasing the sources of tension and developing relations in the interest of my country, Libya, and also the interest of the cordial Iran and the Arab and Islamic region in general.
Mr. Ambassador, nowadays countries are more inclined towards trade. Now, what is the current status of trade ties between Iran and Libya? Are there plans to boost ties in this regard?
Trade relations between the two countries are developing at a slow pace. This is not caused by the Libyan side, since we are open to developing economic relations with Iran, who are friendly. But the Iranian side has some hesitation, or what can be described as not daring to enter quickly and firmly into the Libyan market. We are a country emerging from a war. Therefore, anyone who does not secure their place economically with us will not find a foothold in the future. On that account, the brothers in Iran must be aware of this matter. It is worth noting that Libya is a country rich in diverse economic opportunities. It is possible for Iran, which possesses experience and development in many fields, to summon up Iranian businessmen who will find many job opportunities, starting with medium investments that do not require large capital all the way to strategic investments, which Libya desperately needs.
I understand you have written a book, and this book is about relations between Arab countries and Iran. Can you tell us more about this book which you have written?
This book was published in 2023 and talks about the relations between Iran and some Arab countries such as Iraq, Syria, Saudi Arabia and Palestine. I have divided the relations into two parts, the Shah's era and after the Islamic Revolution.
When you presented your credentials to Iran's President Raisi, he said that the problems of Libya and some Islamic countries are caused by the presence of interference of foreigners. What's your opinion on this point?
Certainly, the presence of foreigners in our region is not welcome. It is a source of anxiety and tension. But what is the alternative? This question must be posed to all active forces in the region. These forces must conduct rounds of dialogue and understanding amongst themselves to prevent foreigners from interfering. There is a proverb that says, the people of Mecca know best about its paths. The people of the Arab and Islamic region know best how to resolve their conflicts, which is contingent on direct understandings and the diffusal of any tension in the region. For example, we in Libya, despite all the religious, social, political and cultural rapprochement with our neighbors in the ocean, have some disagreements, let alone countries that are somewhat different in many aspects. Therefore, this matter must be taken into account and understood. Disputes are resolved with understanding, not by postponing them.
Mr. Ambassador, let's move on to the situation inside Libya. Now, many in Africa love Libya and hope to see a lasting peace and stability in this country. Now, what is the state of politics in terms of creating conditions for holding national elections and forming an inclusive government which will bring together all Libyans?
Libyan history testifies that Libya was a place of friendship with the African and Arab surroundings. It was looking for calm in Africa because it is a continent rich in human and material resources. As for the political conditions in the country, right now, the various Libyan parties, and I will not describe them as conflicting ones since the conflict is over, thank God, now there are only differences of opinion. Thus, the differences between the two sides began to be resolved and the groundwork for holding elections is beginning to take shape, but the realization of this depends on the seriousness of the Libyan political parties.
An interview with the Libyan ambassador to Iran.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Mr. Ambassador, there's been talk about uniting the rival factions in Tobruk and Tripoli. Can we expect good news in the near future regarding this?
Yes, we will see positive news in this subject in the near future. The ice of differences between the two sides began to melt, especially after the Derna disaster and how the Libyan people and politicians in the country came to help. They forgot their differences and past pains.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Ambassador. Now, let's move on to the issue of Palestine, which we know right now is the number one issue in the world. In Libya, we have seen, has voiced support to the measures taken by the International Court of Justice to prevent genocide in Gaza Strip through the case presented by South Africa. Now, can you tell us what your country is doing to ensure that the Israeli regime complies with this ruling by the ICJ?
Our country and most Arab, Islamic and even international countries do not have authority over the Israeli occupation to prevent it from committing crimes and make it comply with international rulings. This entity has been evading United Nations resolutions since the year 1948, but our country can use its relations with foreign countries to push them to taking measures and steps against the occupying entity to comply with the decisions of the International Court and stop its crimes.
Thank you for that. Now, Mr. Ambassador, Libya's High State Council has called for cutting ties with those backing the Israeli regime in its war on Gaza. Now, and it's, the council has also called for halting of oil exports to countries supporting the Israeli offensive on Gaza. Now, has Libya taken any specific step in this regard?
Sayyid Mubarak.
Never think that the Libyan state calls for something and does not do it. What distinguishes the Libyan state throughout the ages is that it does not compromise, it commands righteousness and implements it. We must know that Libya, from a practical standpoint, is in a state of complete hostility with the occupying entity, and its citizens are denied any form of recognition, and the normalization of its citizens and its official and unofficial institutions is not permitted.
So Libya is totally opposed to the normalization of ties with the Israeli regime.
Our position is clear, government and people included. We are against this entity and the normalization of it and anything that distracts from the rights of the Palestinian people. By the way, Libya has always been in favor of free causes and with the rights of the people to decide their fate and to stop the injustice against them, whether in occupied Palestine, in Africa, or even in South America.
Libya is always in the news, mostly because of also illegal immigrants coming from Africa and using the Libyan Mediterranean coast to enter Europe. I'm sure this is an enormous challenge for Libya. How is your country handling this issue?
First, I must clarify an important point, which is Libya does not take a single dollar from any European country to prevent immigration or put an end to it, unlike many countries in the world that take money for this, even indirectly, such as aid and things like that nature. As for the subject of illegal immigration, we have been suffering from it for decades. It's a major challenge for our country because whoever sets foot in it does so illegally and exits the same way, and therefore this is a major security and economic challenge. Libya has played an important role in reducing illegal immigration by developing its security and military equipment and confront the networks operating in this field. Illegal immigration is not only a Libyan problem. Let me clarify that Libya is not a country for settling down, but it's a transit country. In this matter, it's committed to what is required by the international laws regulating the matter. In addition, it rejects any form of dictations, interventions, or requirements that harm its interests. Especially the rumors about the possibility of resettlement or something like that.
Thank you for that, Mr. Ambassador. Now let's move to the oil sector in Libya. You know, Libya is an oil-rich country. And previously, I think in the 1970s or 80s, your production was almost 3.4 million barrels a day. And the current production stands only at 32% of its peak. And Libya, I think, is now 18th in the world in terms of oil production, despite its massive reserves. So what steps have you taken to boost oil production?
During the war, the sector has seen very difficulties, and it was natural at that time. In addition, this sector developed very rapidly. Because of the war, we fell behind in the international market, but we have a realistic plan right now in order to reopen, establish and develop oil fields and refineries.
Mr. Ambassador, we know Libya is an oil-rich country and it has some of the largest oil reserves in Africa, and it once produced 3.4 million barrels a day, but now the production has gone, has decreased significantly. What steps are you taking to increase this production?
During the war period, our energy sector was greatly damaged. This is normal because we were in the vortex of war. In addition, this sector is developing rapidly, and for that reason, we delayed it because of the war. The lack of maintenance of oil and gas refineries delayed us greatly in the energy market, but we have a realistic plan to redevelop and maintain the fields. Opening new refineries will return Libya to the top countries in energy exports.
Mr. Ambassador, now regarding the oil production issue, we know that Iran has attained a level of almost self-sufficiency in oil production. Now, do you plan to use the know-how of Iran in boosting your oil production instead of relying on oil multinationals from Western countries?
We welcome any cooperation with any friendly country, especially Iran, with which share a common history, and the things that unite us outweigh those that divide us with them. Of course, we hope to use the benefits of Iran's experience and try to transfer it to our country. We hope that the level of cooperation between us and Iran will reach this level as our cooperation with the friendly country Italy has.
Now, Mr. Ambassador, our last question. Recently, a Libyan delegation visited Beirut to discuss with the Lebanese authorities regarding the fate of a prominent Lebanese Islamic scholar, Imam Musa Sadr, who disappeared in Libya decades ago. Now, can you tell us more about the fate of this file and how much progress you have made in resolving it?
It is necessary to resolve this subject, especially since it is a legacy left behind by the previous regime. It's also important to develop relations with Lebanon, which we hope that calm and stability will prevail in it. As for the issue of Imam Musa al-Sadr, it is amongst the sensitive security subjects which we cannot reveal everything related to it at the moment, but what I can tell you is that the issue will be resolved soon, God willing.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, for your time today and for answering our questions in this program. It's been a pleasure having you in our program.
Thank you. Merci. Khayli Mamnoun.
And that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today. We had a special guest today, His Excellency Ali Juma Al-Ubaidi, the Ambassador of Libya to Iran. It's been great. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.
Is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kHz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
This
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم dear listeners, welcome back to a new episode of For a Better Life. Once again, we have the opportunity to be here together in order to talk more about ways, rituals, and Islamic principles in order to have a better life. In this episode, specifically in all of the glorious and holy month of Ramadan, I'm studying medicine, and one of the things that caught my attention was the relation between fasting and the holy month of Ramadan and the physical health, which is not actually put emphasis on during the narrations and so on. As we know, we focus on the spiritual dimension of this holy month of Ramadan and its benefits for every human being, but for you to know, and as a wonder, there are so many benefits of fasting for the physical health and the physical status of your body. Let's go through this in more details. As Muslims, we fast for Allah and therefore focus on the spiritual benefits of fasting. As I mentioned, the focus specifically in our narrations and in Islam is on the spiritual aspect of fasting. But fasting in Ramadan also has untold physical benefits. Recent scientific studies show that it can regenerate the immune system and might even boost the cancer-curing effects of chemotherapy in cancer patients undergoing treatment, which we're going to talk more about these different aspects of physical benefits of fasting in this episode. As I mentioned, numerous studies have discovered that fasting can help you live longer, control your weight, improve your mood and concentration, increase your energy level, and improve the quality of your sleep. Among the numerous benefits of Ramadan fasting, we're going to elaborate some of them because, you know, we have limited time, and the benefits of fasting in holy month of Ramadan is beyond the time that we have in these episodes. So consider all these episodes of For a Better Life as triggers for you in order to know more and to search more and seek knowledge about the principles and benefits of fasting. The first actually benefit of fasting in holy month of Ramadan, which I'm going to talk about, is reducing hypertension. As we know, because of the kind of lifestyle that we are having nowadays and the influence of Western lifestyle on people in developing countries, we are seeing a sharp increase in increasing hypertension among people, specifically youngsters. So a new study published in one of the Journal of Medicine shows that short-term intermittent fasting can help reduce hypertension or high blood pressure. This study contributes to a growing body of research showing that intermittent fasting can help improve heart health and reduce the risk for hypertension and other cardiovascular diseases, which are the most common and the most important factor of death nowadays. Another wonder of fasting is that it increases brain function. Fasting has also been shown to have numerous brain benefits, such as higher levels of nerve growth factor, or NGF, which is a kind of factor in body which will help your nerves and neurons in order to grow rapidly. So this protein helps regulate neurons' growth, maintenance, proliferation, and survival. NGF, or nerve growth factor, is essential for neurons' growth and normal function in both the peripheral and central nervous systems. Fasting also increases the expression of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF, which is a protein that supports the survival of existing brain cells and encourages the growth of new ones. Low levels of BDNF have been attributed to an increased risk for Alzheimer's disease. So, as we say, even you can find a relation between country, fasting in Holy Month of Ramadan, and this beautiful ritual of a Muslim community in helping the brain function and stopping degenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are from happening in people. So let's go for a short break in order to get refreshed. We're going to come back in a heartbeat.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
It's all I need.
It's all I need.
It's all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need.
Love is all I need.
Oh, oh, oh.
Love is all I need. To be all
so I need.
And I know that you see how much you
need.
Love is all I need. You mean to me, is your love is all about me, to be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me,
your love is all I need.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Arab English Radio, and as you remember in the last part of our episode, we were talking about different medical benefits of fasting, and we mentioned two important medical benefits of fasting, which was the reduction of hypertension and increasing brain function. In this part of our episode, we're going to talk more about improving body composition. Fasting has been known to improve body composition. This means it can reduce the percentage of body fat a person has while increasing their muscle mass and oral health. As we all know, bodybuilding, going to gyms, doing steroids or hormones in order to have a muscular body is something common among our youngsters. And one of the most beautiful and healthy ways in order to get to a healthy body with a high percentage of muscles and low percentage of fat is fasting. And another dimension of this issue, which we're going to discuss in this episode, is that fasting reduces cancer risk, as I mentioned as the first part of our episode. It's actually a high wonder to see that fasting has all these benefits to your physical body, and specifically this dimension and this criteria about reduction of cancer risk. Fasting actually can help you reduce your risk of cancer. Cancer cells cannot process ketones produced by the liver from fat and fatty acids when in a fasted state. Simply put, fasting helps starve cancer cells and makes them more susceptible to the body's immune system. All of the things that I'm mentioning here are triggers for you in order to go and seek knowledge about this beautiful aspect of our religion. Fasting stimulates autophagy, which is the process by which cells and tissues recycle damaged components. It's what allows your cells to renew themselves and survive without starving. This process promotes longevity and helps prevent conditions associated with aging, including cancer, heart disease, and neurodegenerative disorders such as Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's disease. Another thing which is really interesting about the medical benefit of fasting, which we're going to discuss in our episode, is lowering inflammation. Fasting lowers inflammation, which is a significant cause of aging. This is because fasting triggers changes in your gut microbiota. After fasting, the gut microbiome becomes richer in bacteria with anti-inflammatory properties. I believe I have to mention this important fact that in this episode, the goal of our speech is not to talk in detail about the biological and physiological aspect of fasting in detail, in scientific detail, because this is not supposed to be a scientific episode, but we're here in order to give you the hints of the value of this fasting in our religion, Islam, and so you can understand and find out and figure out the depth of knowledge which is behind your religion, the last religion and the most complete one, Islam. And I believe we have the blessing to be from the Muslim community and to be the chance in order to be born in Muslim families. So when we have this blessing, let's have the knowledge in order to improve the status and level of humanity that we have, in order to have the satisfaction and approval of Allah Almighty in our path, both here in this world and in hereafter. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to me. It was all the time I had for today's episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iranians in the southern city of Isfahan hold a funeral for senior IR